6 lessons I learned in a year of suffering. Well, reflections on losing a lifelong friend. It's episode 215 of BudlaNetwork.com, the podcast. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Bula Network. You'll find the show notes at BulaNetwork.com/215 because it's episode 215. It's been almost a year. It's been almost a year since I published a specific post and a podcast. You can go back and search out the link if you want, or you can go to the show notes and I've got it there. I'm going to talk with you about losing a lifelong friend. It's been about a year, and this Friday would have been his 57th birthday. I'll share with you some lessons that I've learned over the course of the last year. We'll do it next. Stanley was born on April 11th, 1957. He left this life on May the 12th, last year, 2013. And on the day of his death, I did publish a post and a podcast. And again, you can find links to that over at the show notes at BulaNetwork.com/215. Admittedly, it was the most painful post and podcast that I have ever produced. And no, it didn't have anything to do, and it doesn't have anything to do with business or management or leadership or building an organization or a business. It's intensely personal. So if such things are off-putting to you, then avoid it. But if you want to know more about who and what I really am, then you may find it valuable. I will leave it to you to judge. Because this Friday is April 11th, and it would have been his 57th birthday. And I confess that I think of him every day, every single day. Modern marketing gurus regurgitate the ancient maxim. You know, people are all listening to the radio station WIIFM. What's in it for me? Don't talk about yourself. Talk about your prospect. And I understand that, and I do believe that fundamentally that's true, but I have some problems with it. And one of the problems that I have with it is that it presupposes that we're all just morons roaming around devoid of any interest in other people, and that we repel any notion of compassion or empathy. And in fact, you know, we behave like Barney Fife once described giraffes to Opie. He told Opie in an episode where they had taken some stray dogs out to a field and turned them loose, and a storm began to happen. And Barney, of course, was waxing philosophical as he was wont to do and compared dogs to giraffes and said, "Oh, don't worry about it, Opie. You know, they're dogs. They're low to the ground, so the lightning won't strike them. Now, if they were giraffes, we'd have something to worry about." But the line that got me and the line that still tickles me is he tells Opie, "Boy, giraffes are selfish, just running around looking out for number one, getting struck by lightning." And that's kind of how a lot of modern marketing gurus would have us think about ourselves. I mean, we're like Barney's giraffes. We're just all running around looking out for number one. We don't care about anybody else. I don't know that that's true, but I'm going to continue on with the story anyway. And I'm going to tell you about a few things that I learned this year in a year of suffering. No, it's not quite May the 12th yet, but you know, I'm thinking about Stanley more so than maybe normal because this would have been the week that he would have celebrated his birthday. And so I am approaching the first full year since he passed, and I still have moments of enormous sadness, and I freely admit that I sometimes will close a door, I will turn all the lights out, and I'll just simply cry. It doesn't happen often, but you know, well, it happens at least once a month, and usually during a time when, for some reason, I just desperately want to pick up the phone and call him. His number's still in my phone. And I know the number, like him, I know it's gone, but I don't know why. I can't bring myself to delete it. The pivot that I wrote of in that post on May the 12th of last year, sparked in large part by his illness and his subsequent death. It took a number of turns and detours and, well, and I even ran in through a few ditches along the way. My entire career can be summed up in a phrase, business leader. I mean, since I was in my mid-20s, I've led businesses. And 5 years ago, I stepped down, resigning my post as the leader of a company that I had called home for almost 20 years. And when you've done something for so long, it can be difficult to figure out, now what? Helping people, serving people, inspiring people, teaching people, leading people, impacting people, provoking thought, stirring emotions. These were and are the things that had driven me since my youth. And Stanley's death prompted more emotions than anything in my life ever had, because it was personal. It was heart stuff, you know? It wasn't head stuff. Heart stuff. Heart stuff is the stuff, I believe, of extraordinary leadership. And there it was, staring me in the face as it, well, maybe as it never had quite before. I'm at my best when I'm investing in other people. I invest in myself most when I'm investing in other people. And I'm not being altruistic here. I'm just simply being true to who I really am. Because being behind the scenes, kind of lurking in the shadows with a timely word of advice or encouragement here or there, and sitting down privately to help somebody through some constraint, some challenge, pushing and shoving sometimes, nudging maybe at other times, and really trying to propel people into their own spotlight. Those are the moments when I am at my best, and those are the moments when historically I have been at my best. And Stanley and I had such a strong bond that I think we both assumed we'd have each other forever. And truth is, we hope to have each other forever. Now, you might not believe in forever, and if you don't, I'm sad for you. Stanley and I both had faith that eternity is real. I still have that faith. For Stanley, his faith is now realized based upon what we both believe to be true. Namely, we both believed the Bible. Now, usually, we only had one objective when we were together, and that objective was simply to laugh as much as possible. We were marksmen at hitting that target. In fact, I'll go so far as to tell you that we never missed a target. And I think he died knowing that our record of hitting that objective of laughing as much as possible, that record was perfect. And as he lay dying, I couldn't even see the target anymore. And what once had been so natural and had been so easy to hit, I couldn't even find it now. I couldn't even spot it. And I was learning the meaning of the term wrecked. At his death, I used that term with my wife and with my family. And it was all I could tell people. How are you doing? Was the question they would ask. And I would simply respond, I'm wrecked. I'm just wrecked. You know, for some guys, Stanley and I, who could be moody and blue and perhaps not always big fun to be around, together we became two friends who were adept at the craft of volleying these sarcastic remarks. We were equally accomplished at witty observations. No, not everybody appreciated it. Some couldn't keep up. And I will tell you that we put in way, way, way more than 10,000 hours of mastery to the craft. We were accomplished. We were experts. Lesson number one. Life is short. Make it count. Now, I already knew this, but Stanley's passing just made it more real. Well, that and my age. I admit that it didn't have a lot of impact on my professional life, at least not at first, because I was mostly focused on my personal and my spiritual life. But you're here for professional or business type stuff, and I can easily apply that here because it did have application to me in that realm as well. If your career's not going as you'd like, then my question is, when are you going to do something about it? When are you going to stop making excuses? I don't care how old you are. I don't care how young you are. Bob Geldof's 25-year-old daughter, Peaches, died on Monday. Is that young enough for you? I know people who have buried babies. Mickey Rooney, he also died on Monday. He was 93. Is that old enough for you? Death doesn't respect your age. Death is no respecter of persons. Now, you get to choose what you do with the time you've got. And the fact is, the time that you've got is right now. That's all you've got. And so what are you going to do to make a positive difference right now? So many people haven't yet determined to make a positive difference at any time of their life. And too many of us, I think, are just doing time. Too many of us are living in this uncertain future. I mean, the common mantra that you hear, the mantra of the masses is, tomorrow will be better. No, it won't. It won't be better if tomorrow never comes. And even if it does come, the odds are you're going to be just as lazy, just as indifferent, just as unprofitable tomorrow as maybe you are today. And yesterday, and the day before that. Your history, it may not be an absolute predictor of your future, but the odds are really high that you're going to keep doing what you've always done, and so am I. So make today count. Make up your mind. Make up your mind right now. This is the great thing about human beings. We can make up our mind in an instant. That we're going to take responsibility for our life as much as is humanly possible. That the things that we can control, we will give our best effort to try to control. Namely, our choices, our actions, our behaviors. So do that. Do that right now. Determine that you will control your choices, your actions, your behaviors. Embrace that and own it. Lesson number two. Come to grips with what you hate. Pursue what you love. Professionally, I've done lots of things I didn't much like to do. I've even done some things I hated to do. But you know, in my 35 plus year career, I've mostly loved leading and competing. And both of those are personal. Well, intimate even. I love communicating, watching people, listening to people, working with people. I love problem solving. Watching a solution work or fail and then trying to figure it out again or trying to find a better way. I love questioning if we might find a better way. I love asking, what if we did this? What if we did that? And I love answering the question based on whatever information I've got at the moment. I hate red tape. I hate having to ask for permission. I hate tyrannical leaders. I hate autocrats. I hate micromanagers. I hate stagnant thinkers. I hate pessimistic leaders who constantly bark, well, that'll never work. You can easily recognize what you hate. Write it down. Professionally, what do you absolutely, positively hate? And what do you hate to do? I'm not promising that you're going to be able to avoid every single thing that you hate to do, but you sure don't want to make that activity the majority of your work. Now, it can be a whole lot tougher, at least in my experience, to figure out what you love. Think about it. Write it down. Professionally, what do you love so much that you lose yourself in the activity? And when you're doing it, time just flies. When you're doing it, you perform almost without thinking. I mean, it just seems almost innate. What is that? Think of it in terms of being the thing you'd like to do most of the time. Lesson number 3, understand what you're best at and acknowledge what's hard for you. We spend so much time chasing dreams that we may never realize, and yet we neglect to sit down and examine our lives as fully as we could or as fully as we should. Now, I love chasing dreams. Don't get me wrong. I think it can be healthy to chase a dream in our head to a point. The problem is we can't just sit around dreaming about things because plans and strategies have to be constructed. Problems have to be solved. Action has to be taken. Corrective action has to be taken. And adversity has to be overcome. Those are hard things to do. And they're harder when you're chasing something you're not very good at. So take the time to figure out what you're naturally good at and stop trying to be something and somebody you're not. Lesson number 4, be relentless. Let tenacity rule your life. The thing that I've learned in the course of the last year, and again, these are not all brand new things. In fact, these are things that I've known for a long time, but you know, they just get reinvigorated. They get refocused when you go through something, I guess, like the loss of a lifelong friend. Face your fears and stomp them into the ground. That phone call? Yeah, you know the one you're afraid to make. Make it anyway. I mean, if there's a chance that you'll find success by making that call, make the call. Oh, but I know what you're thinking, but what if it fails? What if I fail? Okay, well, then you fail. But not making the call, that's a surefire way. You're guaranteed to fail if you refuse to make the call. So take whatever actions you're avoiding because you're afraid. Do them anyway. And before long, taking action will be your habit and the fear will subside. Now, am I saying that you're going to be devoid of fear at some point? No, I don't think so. We need fear, but we don't need to let fear paralyze us. Be ruthless in your pursuits. Dogged persistence. I think dogged persistence, I really do. And every day I believe this more and more. Dogged persistence is the path to accomplishment. Dogged persistence. Now, that doesn't mean that you're ruthless with people. When I say be ruthless in your pursuits, I don't mean to be ruthless with people. I don't mean to be a jerk. Don't be insensitive. Don't be selfish like the giraffe. Just be focused on what you're trying to accomplish and find a way to get there, to get it done. You haven't accomplished what you want because you haven't taken enough action or you haven't taken enough of the appropriate action. So do more. Do more, watch the results, and then adjust your actions. And keep doing what you fear most because it's the fear that's defeating your dreams and your plans and your strategies. And of course, as we often say around here, do more of what works and do less of what doesn't. In fact, stop doing what doesn't work. Lesson number 5, leave an impact. Create footprints, fingerprints, and any other mark that will affect people. If you want to chase money, go ahead. I mean, what's stopping you? Not me. I don't really want to chase money. Now, having said that, I want to make as much money as I can. But at my age, it's not about stuff. It's about people. It's about the things that I would like to do for my family and close friends. Because I've reached a point in life where money is a tool. Other people say that, but I'll tell you, when I was younger, money wasn't a tool. I wanted stuff. But now money is a vehicle to do meaningful things for people that I love. My wife, my kids, my grandkids. Yeah, in that order. Money is a resource for good. The congregation where I work and worship, that's a major driver for me. To contribute to something vastly bigger than me and vastly more important than me. That's a driver. But making money isn't the same as making a mark. I'm much more interested in making a mark. Specifically, well, professionally, I want to make money by making a mark. Personally, well, I just want to make a mark. But I'm like you. We got to make a living. So professionally, I want to be able to make money by making a mark. It wasn't always that way for me, and it may not be that way for you right now, but I would encourage you to think like that. Consider it. That means making a difference in somebody's life. It means being a friend, a supporter, a mentor, a fill in the blank. Being something for people so they can't imagine their life without me. Now, does that sound selfish? Well, maybe. But it's honest. I mean, I want to live so people will miss me when I'm gone. And that's demanding, and it challenges me every day to find ways to be valuable. Some days, maybe even most days, I fail. But I'm still trying, and I hope to become more accomplished with practice as time goes by. Lesson number 6. Do something. Make a difference. Yes, you'll make enemies, but you'll also make some solid friends. Stanley and I knew as teenagers this truth. If you're not willing to be hated by some, you'll be loved by no one. Now, some people misunderstood our snarkiness. Other people resented our friendship. We didn't care. The people who were most attracted to us were the people that, well, they were the people that we were most attracted to. The people that wanted to hang around us were the people that we wanted to hang around. And that's how it works. Birds of a feather and all that. I prefer, personally, fewer really close friends over a vast number of casual friends. I know a lot of people, but I'm close to very few. That's intentional. It's not snobbish. It's just a preference. And it doesn't mean that I don't care about people, including casual friends. It just means, listen, here's what I've understood as time has gone by in my life, that life isn't infinite. And my energy and my emotions, they're not infinite either. So if I'm going to be the most helpful that I can be, then I've got to watch where I invest myself. Now, professionally, I can invest in a broader audience because the scope of influence, well, it's more narrow. It's professional. Personally, I have to restrain myself. Well, I really don't have to. I'm just naturally bent to kind of restrain myself because I have extraordinary empathy. I mean, it's just how I'm wired. I can't temper how much I care and how much I get wrapped up in trying to help very close friends. The truth is, I have to make sure I'm not intruding and overstepping my bounds. Mostly, I probably do a pretty good job. I try to stay in bounds, but I don't always. Because I'm driven to make a difference, and I'm perfectly willing to accept that some people are not going to like me for that. I remember having a conversation with my son when he was a teenager, and I said to him, if you're going to be a person of action, you're going to be judged harshly by some. And I taught both of my children, my son and my daughter, to be people of decision, to be people of action. And I've always warned them that, you know, some people aren't going to like it because some people are going to throw rocks at anybody who tries to make a difference. Throwing rocks at the action takers for some is a full-time hobby. So just brace yourself and get ready for it. You know you're not taking enough action if you're not making somebody angry. I mean, it's just how it rolls. So focus on the friends that you're collecting along the way. don't focus on the enemies. Well, so what's the conclusion of all this? Okay, Stanley's death didn't teach me these things necessarily, but his passing did reinforce their importance in my life, and it's hard to explain. I've been asked, and it's just very hard to explain how one friend's passing can compel such introspection. I mean, he was the one person, he was the only guy in my life who I could talk to about anything. My wife is clearly my closest confidant, but Stanley was the sole male sounding board in my life. He was sick most of the last year of his life, so my loss was kind of in a slow cooker. It went into a slow cooker at some point in the last year of his life, really in the year before. But then all of a sudden, there was the loss magnified at his death. And even though our last conversations didn't make a lot of sense because his mind was quickly slipping away, there was something to the fact that I just knew he was still here. You know, I mean, he was still alive. He wasn't the same. His mind was playing tricks on him. And I don't know, maybe I was hopeful, even though there wasn't much hope. Well, there wasn't any hope, but maybe I was hopeful. Maybe I was hopeful that things could get better. I knew they wouldn't. I knew what was inevitable. I think he even knew what was inevitable, but I wasn't wrecked until it happened. I wasn't wrecked until he passed. Yes, I wallow in sorrow sometimes. And at the time of his death, I will tell you, I wallowed in sorrow for weeks. I wallowed in sorrow for months. I liken it to a diver. I've never gone scuba diving, but I've watched enough to know. You know, it's like these divers who they go really deep, maybe to the ocean floor in certain places, and they have to be very careful in coming up, or they'll get what's called the bends. And so they gravitate back to the surface very slowly. Not too quickly. And that's how I've described my ascent back to normalcy. It took time. It just took time. It was slow and it was steady. I'd like to tell you it was deliberate, and sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes it was just the mere passage of time. My best skills continue to be empathy, communication, and problem solving. In fact, I'll tell you that aside from my experience and whatever wisdom life and my experience has taught me, those three things are the three things that I bring with me in all of my work. And if people deem me worthy to serve them, it's those three things that I bring to the party. Those are the three things that bring value. My empathy, communication, and problem solving. Those have always been my three biggest assets. Stanley's death refocused me to, well, they refocused me to handle up a little better on that last one, problem solving. Because over the past few years, my skills to help other people find solutions to their problems, which was very natural for me and very easy for me, not ever difficult for me. But it always left me alone struggling to solve my own problems. I mean, I always felt like the cobbler who had no shoes, you know? I mean, I felt like the mechanic who was fixing other people's cars while my own was up on blocks because it wouldn't run. I mean, things would leap out at me whenever I helped other people. And yet I could sit and I could search intently for answers to my own problems, and I would just be completely baffled as how to even begin. And it was a struggle. It was a struggle that I suppose every person experiences at some point in their life. And I was, frankly, I was puzzled that it was something I was experiencing so late in life. And so this Friday would have been Stanley's 57th birthday. And in a few weeks, once we get into May, I'll be 57. And it is very weird to think that I have reached an age beyond any age that Stanley ever did. And his death wrecked me, but His life impacted me like no other. And that's his legacy. Not his death, but his life. I mean, that's your legacy. That's going to be my legacy. That's his legacy for me. I hope I had the same impact on him. I'm pretty sure I did. And now today, I'm hoping that I can have a similar, okay, maybe that's asking too much. I'm hoping that I can have a little bit of an impact on you. I appreciate you listening. If you subscribe to the podcast, well, I just can't say thank you enough. It's a huge honor, and it's a big commitment. I mean, it's a big commitment to subscribe to a podcast, even if you don't listen to all the episodes. I mean, because I know it's not easy to do. I do have links to hopefully make it easier on you. If you go to BulaNetwork.com, you'll see them over on the left-hand margin of the website. iTunes and Stitcher and whatever your favorite RSS reader is. There are also icons over at the website, social media icons, Facebook, Google Plus, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter, YouTube. Did I leave anything out? I don't think so. I'd love to send you a free video. It's entitled 15 Obstacles to Success or Greater Success. And along the way, I give you some free actionable business tips too. Right to your inbox. You can just plug your email address in. You'll see it. It's over at the website. Thanks for listening. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. This is the Yellow Studio. On July the 18th, 2010, Stanley sat in my living room with my guitar, which I do not know how to play. He had brought his Taylor, but he kind of fell in love with my guitar because it's super easy to play. In fact, he always told me, he said, if you can't learn to play this one, then you're just too stupid to learn. And I said, well, don't underestimate my stupidity. At any rate, he began to sing, and a friend of ours came over. Fellow by the name of Clint, and Stanley picked on my guitar, and Clint did some singing with him. At the end of this song, you'll hear the high harmony, and that high harmony is Clint, but this is Stanley picking and singing from July the 18th, 2010.
Oh, well, that's the Lewis family. We're great on this one. Let's see, I think I play that up a little. You have heard a little Moses in the bulrush. You have heard of fearless David and his sling. You have heard the story told of David Joseph and of Jonah and the whale you often sing. There are many, many others in the Bible. I would like to meet them all, I do declare. By and by the Lord will surely let us meet them at that meeting in the air. There's going to be a meeting in the air in that sweet, sweet by and by. I'm going to meet you over there in that home beyond the sky. Such singing there you'll hear, never heard by mortal ear, is glorious, I do declare. And God's own Son will be the leading one at the meeting in the air. I can't.
I'm getting tickled. There the doubters will be missing altogether. All the skeptics will be absent in that place. There will be no grumblers present to disturb us. And the Aikens will be sent so far away. There the saints will have his seal upon their foreheads. Dressed in raiment none but ransom ones can wear. All who have wedding garments will be present at that meeting in the air. Well, there's going to be a meeting in the air in that sweet, sweet by and by. I'm going to meet you over there in that home beyond the sky. Such singing there you'll hear, never heard by mortal ear. It'll be glorious, I do declare. God's own son will be a leading one at that meeting in the air. God's own son will be a leading one at that meeting in the air.
All you needed was a